Raging Rivers, a horrible geography book read by Vanna Vamp, by Anita Duneri, illustrated by Mike Phillips. Introduction. Geography is full of horrible surprises. Take learning about rotten rivers for a start. One minute you're sitting in your nice warm classroom nodding happily off to sleep while your geography teacher's voice goes on and on and on. Today's lesson is all about fluvial bedloads. That's the tricky technical term for a river's sandy bottom. Open your books at page blah blah blah. You close your eyes and start to dream. You're sitting on a grassy riverbank, a long cold drink in one hand, a fishing rod in the other. Lovely. The sun is shining, the birds are singing, geography doesn't seem so boring after all. Bliss. Suddenly, your dream turns nasty, really nasty. Now you're sitting in the pouring rain, up to your knees in muddy water, feeling like a drowned rat. What a nightmare. Yes, your teacher's taken you on a ghastly geography field trip. And it's horrible. So horrible that you're glad to wake up and find yourself back in your geography lesson again. It may be boring, but at least it's dry. Blah, blah, blah-de-blah. But not all geography is dismally damp and uncomfortable. Some bits are horribly exciting and interesting. Try this simple experiment. Smile sweetly at your mom, dad, or guardian, and tell them you're off for a bath. Don't wait for a reply. They'll be too shocked to speak. Go into the bathroom and turn the taps on full. How long does it take the bath to fill up? About 10 minutes? Now try to imagine 200 million bath taps turned on full. This is how much water it takes to fill the awesome Amazon, the biggest river on Earth. Back in your bathroom, pull out the plug, flap your towel around, and pretend you've had a good long soak. Your grown-up will be ever so impressed. And that's what this book is all about. Long enough to stretch right around the world, strong enough to carve out mile deep valleys, angry enough to flood a whole town, with wicked waterfalls as tall as the Eiffel Tower, rushing rivers are all the rage. In Raging Rivers, you can explore the world's greatest rivers with Travis, your intrepid tour guide. That's me! Take the plunge over the world's highest waterfalls. Reverse! Catch and cook a piranha for lunch. Mind your fingers. I'll just have a salad. Snap, snap. Learn how to survive in a flood, against all the odds. Slosh! This is geography like never before, and it certainly isn't boring. All you have to do is keep turning the pages. You don't even need to get wet. Unless, of course, you drop your book in the bath. Wild West by River. The Amazing Adventures of Lewis and Clark. Washington, D.C., USA, 1803. The two young men summoned to President Thomas Jefferson's office shivered slightly, although the room was warm. They had just been handed the most important mission of their lives, to lead the first ever official expedition across the wild west of America to find a river route to the Pacific Ocean. Jefferson's idea was to open up these lands for trade and settlement, and to make America richer and more powerful than ever before. There was just one problem. No one had explored these vast lands before. No one knew what dangers lay ahead for them, or if they would ever make it back home. It was enough to make anyone shiver. President Jefferson shook their hands and wished them goodbye and good luck. He didn't care what other people said. He was sure that he'd found the right men for the job. The two men in question were dashing Captain Meriwether Lewis, the President's trusty private secretary, and Lewis's old friend, Lieutenant William Clark. They were young, strong, brave, and handsome. They'd need to be all of these things. Okay, so good looks weren't that important. It was going to be a long and rocky road. Lewis and Clark put their heads together, and soon they'd hatched a daring plan. They would travel up the Missouri River as far as they could go, cross the Rocky Mountains, then follow the Columbia River to the Pacific. Simple. They spent the winter preparing for the expedition. They were not traveling alone. With them went a group of 43 men, mostly soldiers, grandly named the Corps of Discovery. They also took 6 tons of food. When this ran out, they'd have to hunt for more. Weapons, medicines, scientific equipment, and gifts for the local people. These were loaded into 3 sturdy boats, 1 barge, and 2 canoes. These were crucial. Without good boats, it was sink or swim. At last, on Monday, May 14th, 1804, everything was ready. A single shot was fired to signal the off, and the expedition headed out of the town of St. Louis on the banks of the Missouri. It would be 2.5 years before they would see home again. From St. Louis, they followed the mighty Missouri as it wound westward through rolling green plains where huge herds of buffalo roamed. For 5 months, they made steady progress. Canoeing upriver, watching the world go by, was really quite pleasant. The only flies in the ointment were the swarms of mosquitoes constantly buzzing around their heads. Very irritating. In October, they reached the land of the Mandan Indians. They were warmly welcomed and decided to spend the winter there because the river would soon be covered in ice. The winter of 1804 to 1805 was very long, very cold, and very boring. On some days, temperatures plummeted to a teeth-chattering low of negative 40 Celsius. The members of the expedition stayed snug and warm, but bored stiff inside their log cabins. It was far, far too cold to risk setting foot outside those 4 walls. By the following April, they were all glad to be on the move again. There was just one tiny hitch. So far, they'd been able to follow their route on some roughly drawn charts, but from here on, the maps ran out. Completely. What lay ahead was utterly unknown territory. Without maps, Lewis and Clark had no idea what they were in for, whether or not they'd be hiking up mountains, wading through rivers, or hacking their way through vegetation. There was just no knowing. And they could only hope that they were going in the right direction. But plucky Lewis and Clark weren't worried. They hired a local Indian guide to help them out, someone who did know the lay of the land, and continued upriver to the Rocky Mountains. Now came the worst part of the journey. Crossing the mountains was a terrible ordeal. Their food ran short, and at night the weather turned bitterly cold. All the men could do was grit their chattering teeth and keep plodding grimly on. Their courage paid off. On the other side of the mountains lay wide open plains, and the Columbia River. Finally, on November 7, 1805, they sailed down the river to its mouth in the sea. At last, they had reached the Pacific Ocean and their journey's end. The following spring, they began their long journey home again, reaching St. Louis on September 23, 1806. Lewis and Clark were given a hero's welcome. Everyone was glad to see them, especially if they'd been given up for dead. They'd covered some 7,000 kilometers, most of it by canoe. They'd been growled at by grizzly bears, rattled at by rattlesnakes, and riddled with frostbite, fear, and starvation. Lewis had even been shot in the leg by someone who mistook him for a deer. It's true. Despite this, only one man in the team had died, probably from appendicitis. The expedition had been a raging triumph. True, the river route was not very practical. If you weren't a brave explorer, it was much too long and dangerous. Many Americans did later follow in Lewis and Clark's footsteps in search of new lands and trade, but they sensibly went overland by wagon. Geographically, though, it was all a rip-roaring success. Lewis and Clark's expedition journals were crammed full of maps, sketches, and notes about the rivers they had sailed down and the people they'd met. They kept notes about absolutely everything. That's the sort of thing geographers do. Places and people that horrible geographers had never seen before. Going with the flow. Of course, good old Lewis and Clark weren't the first people to realize just how horribly handy rivers can be. They used rivers to get them from A to B. But people have also been drinking them, washing in them, fishing in them, and generally messing about in them for years and years. Tum-ti-tum! The Romans even built a city on one. According to legend, the city of Rome was built by two brothers called Romulus and Remus. They were identical twins. Their mom was the priestess Rhea Silvia. Their dad was Mars, the god of war. So far, so good. The one bad apple in their happy family was their wicked great-uncle, crazy King Amulius. Casus. That's Roman for cheese. Great-uncle Amulius was worried sick that one day when the twins were older, they tried to seize his throne. So he shoved them in a basket and chucked them into the raging river Tiber. As well as saving his royal skin, it would save him a fortune in birthday presents. Bye-bye, boys! The twins drifted downstream and came to a stop at the bottom of the Palatine Hill. There, a she-wolf found them. But instead of wolfing them down for lunch, she took them home and brought them up to be nice, well-behaved, wolves. And I thought our table manners were bad. Later, they moved in with a kindly shepherd. They had to promise not to chase the sheep, but they never forgot their happy wolfhoods and decided to build their old wolf mom a splendid city on the spot where she'd found them, for her retirement. Building began, but things soon went horribly wrong. Romulus and Remus fell out big time, over the height of a wall. You see, Romulus built the wall to defend the city from attack, but Remus said it was useless, way too low to stop anyone, and to prove his point, he jumped over it. I wish he'd go and jump in the river. Romulus was furious. Did the twins make up? Nope, they did not. Romulus pulled out his sword and killed Remus. Then he named the riverbank city after himself. I name the city after me. So, if you believe your legends, Rome was built next to the river Tiber by a pair of twins brought up by a kindly wolf. Sounds reasonable. Teacher teaser. Outweigh your teacher with this Roman river talk. Ooh, miss, look! Jenkins has descended into the fluvial flow. What has Jenkins done? Answer. Roughly translated, this means, ooh, miss, look! Jenkins has fallen in the river. Fluvial is the posh name for anything to do with rivers. It comes from Latin, the old language of the river-loving Romans. What on earth is a raging river? Some bits of geography are horribly difficult to understand. Don't worry, you can leave those bits out. This book is about the other bits, the bits that will turn you into a genius geographer without any effort at all. Take raging rivers, for instance. Your teacher may try to bamboozle you with all sorts of boring and baffling facts about rivers. Take no notice. It's just your teacher trying to make himself or herself feel important. Pathetic, eh? The horrible truth is that a river is a stream of fresh water. That means it's not salty like the sea that flows across the land. Simple. Earth-shattering fact. A better name for our planet would be planet water. Why? Well, about 3/4 of the Earth is covered in water. Most of this, about 97%, is salty and fills the oceans and seas. The rest is called fresh water. Some of it's frozen in ice caps and glaciers, or flows along underground, which doesn't leave much for rivers. In fact, of all the water on planet water, less than a paltry 1% flows in rivers. Think of it this way. If you could fit all the water on Earth into one big bucket, less than a teaspoon of it would be raging river water. Amazing. Water on the brain. You might think that yummy chocolate milkshake is the most useful and precious liquid on earth, but you'd be wrong. Dead wrong. While you could go for weeks without a milkshake, without water to drink, you'd be dead as a dinosaur in a few days. And where does most of this water come from? From raging rivers, of course. Rivers might only make up 1% of the earth's water, but that 1% is fresh water, which, when it's been cleaned, we can drink. Are you sure this water's been cleaned? The first person to study water seriously, well, it takes all sources, British scientist Henry Cavendish, 1731 to 1810. Henry was born in Nice, France, but spent most of his life in London. Now, Nice Henry was a bit of a loner. He lived with his dad until his dad died and didn't go out very much. Well, you wouldn't either if you'd had Henry's dire dress sense. His favorite outfit was a hopelessly unfashionable purple suit with a frilly collar and matching cuffs, topped off by a threadbare three-cornered hat. It looked frightful. No wonder Henry didn't have many friends. He certainly didn't have a girlfriend. In fact, he wouldn't even allow girls to set foot in his house. He thought they were a bad influence. Go away! Luckily, Henry had one saving grace. He was absolutely brilliant at chemistry. He spent most of his time in his house doing chaotic chemistry experiments. He much preferred chemistry to people. After all, test tubes couldn't talk back. You've got to get out more. Anyway, when Lucky Henry was 40 years old, he inherited £1,000,000. He was rich, but did he let the money go to his head? Oh, no. Did he blow all his cash on fine wine, fancy clothes, or exotic holidays? Nope, he did not. He continued to work as hard as ever and spent most of his lovely lolly on, guess what? You've got it went on yet more chemistry kits and chemistry books. It was just as well for horrible geography that it did because not long afterwards, Henry Cavendish made the most amazing discovery. One day in his laboratory, he mixed up some hydrogen and oxygen gas in a jar and heated the mixture up. What do you think he saw? A. The size of the jar covered with soot. B. The size of the jar covered with water. Or C. The size of the jar covered with slime. Answer. B. The size of the jar were covered with water. What Brandy Henry had discovered was that water is not made of one single substance, i.e. plain old water, as single-minded scientists thought. In fact, it's made up of two gases, hydrogen and oxygen. The reaction between the two created water vapor which condensed, turned into liquid water when it touched the sides of the jar. Incredible. In chemist code, fresh water is called H2O. That means two hydrogen atoms and one oxygen atom joined together as a water molecule. And billions of wonderful water molecules make up a raging river. Today, someone like Henry might be called a horrible hydrologer. That's the posh name for a geographer who studies river water. And hooray, Henry was frightfully posh. Both his grandfathers were frightfully posh dukes who left Henry some frightfully posh dosh. Earth-shattering fact. But where on earth does all this horrible H2O come from? It can't all be made in chemistry jars. And how does it get into raging rivers? Here's an earth-shattering fact for you to flow with. The water found in raging rivers has flowed millions and millions of times before. In the water cycle, it's recycled again and again. So the water flowing in the awesome Amazon may once have flowed through ancient Rome. Mind-boggling, eh? To see how the water cycle works, imagine you're one of hard-working Henry's marvelous molecules. Better still, imagine your geography teacher as one. Okay, so we'll have to use your imagination. You're about to go on a very long journey. Over the page, there's a picture to show you the way. Are you ready to go with the flow? 1. The sun shines on the oceans, heating up the water. That's you. You're feeling nice and warm, but not for long. 2. Yeah, it's getting a bit too hot for your liking, but fortunately a cool breeze lifts you into the air. That's you evaporating along with billions of other molecules. The intense heat of the sun has turned you into invisible water vapor. 3. As you rise, you cool down. That's a relief, and drop back into liquid. Millions of you molecules gang together to make a water droplet. 4. Then millions of droplets gang together to make a cloud. The sea looks a long way away now. 5. Inside the cloud, things are really moving. Other molecules are bashing into you and joining your droplet until it's too heavy to hang around. Look out, you're going for a long journey back to Earth. Yep, you're falling as rain. 6. You might fall into a river which carries you to the sea. You might fall onto the river plain and trickle into the river. You might soak straight into the ground, or you might fall straight into the sea. But your journey's not over yet. No way. It's about to start all over again. Earth-shattering fact. To work out how long you'll be away from home, here are a few time-saving tips. A water molecule hangs around in the air for about 10 days before it falls as rain. If it or you splashes straight into a raging river, you could go with the flow for several days. But if you soak straight into the ground, you could stay put for millions of years before you rejoin a river. Add another 3,000 years, once you reach the ocean, you may never have to go to school again. How on earth do rivers flow? 1. Rivers always flow downhill, which seems horribly obvious when you realize that they're dragged down by gravity. It's the same when you go downhill on your bike. You don't need to pedal. Gravity does all the work. Gravity is the force which brings things down to Earth. It's what keeps your feet on the ground. It happens when a large object, the Earth, pulls a small object, the river or you on your bike, towards it. 2. A river doesn't always flow at the same speed. It speeds up and slows down. This isn't because the river gets tired. It's because of a force called friction. You get friction when two objects try to push past each other and slow each other down, like when you're out shopping and get stuck in the crowds. What's this got to do with rivers? Well, sometimes friction between the river, object number 1, and its bed and banks, object number 2, slows the water down. A river flows fastest on the surface, near the middle, where friction is much weaker. See how fast a river flows. What you need? A stopwatch, a tape measure, 2 sticks, an orange, a river. What you do? A. Measure out a 10-meter stretch of riverbank. Mark the start and end with the sticks. B. Drop the orange into the water. C. Time the orange as it flows downstream. That's the direction the water is flowing in. D. Now for some boring maths. You can skip this bit if it's too much like homework. Remember how some bits of river flow faster than others? To work out an average speed for the whole river, you need to multiply your answer by 0.8. For example, if the orange travels 10 meters in 20 seconds, the flow speed is 0.5 meters per second. If you times this by 0.8, you get an average of 0.4 meters per second. Experts use average speeds to work out things like how much water the river carries, but that's for another maths lesson. 3. Rivers flow fastest down steep slopes, and you don't get much steeper than a waterfall. The Niagara River speeds up to 108 kilometers per hour as it plummets over Niagara Falls. That's about 16 times normal walking pace. Time to get your running shoes on. Wow, a rushing, raging river! 4. At any time, there's only enough water in all the world's rivers to keep them flowing for about 2 weeks. Without fresh supplies, they'd quickly dry up. 5. The ancient Greeks had some funny ideas about what gets a river flowing. They knew all about the water cycle and all about rain. A right bunch of know-alls they were. But they didn't believe for a single minute that enough rain could fall to fill even one raging river. Impossible! They thought that the water must come from the sea, flowing into rivers through underground streams, and somehow losing its salty taste on the way. 6. In 1674, a French lawyer, politician, and part-time hydrologist, Pierre Perrault, measured the amount of rain falling in a year over the land drained by the River Seine. Can't you find a drier hobby? What did he find? He worked out that there was enough rain to fill the Seine 6 times over and still have some left for a quick wash. The clever clogs Greeks had got it wrong. 7. Horrible geographers now know that water gets into rivers in 4 different ways, and they all start with rain. Here's Travis to guide you through them. Some rain falls straight into the river. Simple. Some rain falls on the ground. It runs downhill into small streams which flow together to make a river. Some rain falls to the ground and freezes into glaciers. When the weather warms up, parts of the glaciers start to melt. This starts a stream. You can guess the rest. Some rain falls and soaks into the ground. Boringly, it's called groundwater. Some of it flows straight into rivers, and as the rivers flow downstream, some rainwater gushes up as a spring. 8. Luckily, rivers don't have to rely on groundwater for the whole of their water supply. Just as well. They'd be waiting a very long time. Groundwater flows very slowly. Very slowly indeed. This is what one scientist said about it. A snail moves faster than groundwater. Another scientist, American John Mann, decided to see if this snaily tale was true. You can try a slimy experiment for yourself. What you need? A tape measure, a stopwatch, a snail, plenty of spare time on your hands. What you do? A. Take the snail out into your garden. B. Put it down on the path. C. Time how long it takes the snail to trail along for a meter. If you get bored waiting, cut the distance down. What do you think happens? A. The snail leads you up the garden path. B. The snail moves at a snail's pace, obviously. C. The snail moves faster than goes slow groundwater. Answer? C. For this experiment, John Mann worked out that groundwater moves at only 1/70th of a snail's pace. That's 70 times slower than a slow-coach snail. And who said doing science experiments wasn't boring? Raging River Record Breakers. Test your teacher. After all this flowing to and fro, you'll need a well-earned rest. Why not veg out on the sofa, put your feet up, and leave the hard work to somebody else? Somebody like your geography teacher. Test their hydrological know-how with this quick quiz. 1. The Nile is the longest river on Earth. True or false? Answers. 1. True. The record-breaking Nile in Egypt is 6,695 kilometers long, making it officially the world's longest river. But it's a very close thing. The Amazon in South America is just 255 kilometers behind. Some horrible geographers see things differently. According to their measurements, the Amazon comes out longer. Note, don't worry about these differences. Geographers are always falling out. You see, geography isn't an exact science, which means nobody knows anything for certain. So although geographers like to think they have an answer for everything, it isn't always the same answer. Amazon, Amazon, Amazon! Nile, Nile, Nile! 2. The Amazon holds the most water. True. The Amazon... The awesome Amazon carries more water than any other river on Earth, 60 times more than the Nile, and one-fifth of all river water on Earth. At its mouth, the Amazon empties 95,000 liters of water into the sea, every single minute. That's like emptying out 53 Olympic-sized swimming pools. Compared to this raging river, the Nile's a mere trickle. The shortest river is D River. True or false? True. It's true that, at just 37 meters long, Dee River in Oregon, USA, is the world's shortest river. It flows from Devil's Lake into the Pacific Ocean. Would it not be quicker to walk? Scrape. 4. The Rhine is the longest river in Europe. True or false? 4. False. The Volga in Russia is 3,530 kilometers long and the longest river in Europe. The Rhine is only 1,320 kilometers long, less than half the Volga's length. 5. Some rivers are usually dry. True or false? True. Many desert rivers hardly ever have any water in them. Because there's so little rain in the desert, they're dry for much of the year. Other rivers are wet in winter and dry in summer. 6. Some rivers are completely frozen in winter. True or false? True. Every winter, the Ob Irtysh River in snowbound Siberia freezes along its whole length. The upper part of the river, high up in the mountains, stays frozen solid for 5 whole months. Brr. It's still frozen then? Crack. What your teacher's score means. Allow 2 points for each correct answer, and no cheating. 10 to 12 points? Excellent. With such in-depth knowledge, your teacher will make a top hydrologist. 6 to 8 points? Not bad, but the answers aren't quite flowing yet. If your teacher paid a bit more attention in class, he or she might just stay on course. 4 points and below? Oh dear, I'm sorry to say, but your teacher's far too wet for this type of work. Better stick to teaching. Had a good rest? Feeling ready for anything? I hope so. You're going to need all your energy for the thrills and spills waiting for you in the next chapter. You're about to follow the course of a raging river all the way from its start until it reaches the sea. Are you ready to go with the flow? Time to put on your life jacket, just in case your canoe capsizes and you end up falling in.